everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in today. And thank you to our listener, Douglas, for suggesting today's case. Fair warning, we will be discussing two child victims, which we don't do that frequently, but it's also unique in that there is hope that the two victims are still alive. Unfortunately, it's not that often that we have that kind of hope in the cases we cover. So yeah, it's a little bit different today. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And thank you to those of you who have left a nice review recently. Those are always encouraging to read. All right, let's get into it. Christopher Zaharias was 3.5 years old and Lisa Zaharias was 15 months old at the time of their abduction in 1987. Louis, their father, was raised in New York City, where he endured a difficult childhood. His father abandoned the family when Lou was just 17, which left him consumed with anger. Lou has since acknowledged that this fueled his turn toward violence and aggression.
What do you mean by that? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Louis said that he would get in fights with people a lot. I'm not saying that he was, you know, abusing anyone or anything like that, but if someone upset him, you know, it wouldn't be unusual for him to just get into it with that person. Despite his frustrations with his father, Louis maintained a good relationship with his mother, but he began using drugs as a teenager, and the drug use continued when he moved to Irvine, California to attend law school after earning an undergraduate degree. Louis had aspirations of becoming an attorney, and it was when he was attending Western State College of Law in 1977 that he met his future wife, Susan Gamel. Susan was 17 years old and was on her first day on the job as a receptionist at the college, and Louis was taken by her beauty.
So Louis had to have been at least, what, 22, 23 at the time?
Yeah, he was 23 when he started law school and when he met Susan.
Okay. Not a big fan of that age difference.
Yeah, I feel like most parents wouldn't want their 17-year-old daughter dating someone who's 6 years older. But I do think this is more common at that time in the 70s than it probably would be today. As is reported in Moms of the Missing by Stephen Howe, Louis and Susan instantly connected, and Louis shared how she brought humanity and warmth into his life, a life that was once consumed with anger. Susan came from quite a different background from Lou, a background of wealth and privilege. She was from a small town in Oklahoma where her father owned a successful oil company. Now, at some point, her family moved to Chino, California, which is why she was in California in the first place when she met Lou. But her parents later moved back to Oklahoma when she was out of the house. There were issues early on in Lou and Susan's relationship because Susan's family did not like him. According to Lou, Susan's wealthy Baptist parents took exception to their daughter dating an Italian Catholic man who did not come from wealth. The Ventura County Star reported in 1998 that Susan's family gave her an ultimatum. If she wanted to be with Louis, they would not be in her life. This hurt Susan deeply, and she wrote letters to her parents begging them to accept Lou, but ultimately Susan chose Lou, and I can imagine since her parents already didn't like Lou, this only further grew their disdain for him.
So did they completely cut off contact with her?
I believe there was no contact for a long time other than, you know, the letters Susan would write to her family, but they weren't necessarily responding. Now, later, because this does go on for quite a few years, about 10 years, they were in communication sometimes, yes. And also, I think Susan was still in contact with some of her extended family members, but it was her parents who really did not like Lou.
Did she have any siblings?
She had one sister, yes, who she was very close with. I don't know in this 10-year period, if they were speaking with frequency, but I know they were very close. But Susan's parents' disapproval of Louis was so strong that they didn't even attend the wedding when Susan and Lou married in 1981. Now, I believe they had valid reasons to dislike Lou and disapprove of their relationship, but it seemed they were focused on the wrong reasons. Lou was still using drugs like cocaine when he and Susan met, and the pair used drugs together. They partied a lot, but it's unclear if Susan's family was aware of this at that time. If they were, then I can understand them not wanting their daughter to be around that. Susan used drugs occasionally, but in the late 70s, Louis became increasingly dependent on his drug of choice, cocaine, to the point where he eventually overdosed. He credits Susan with saving his life as she administered CPR and gave him a dose of Valium, according to Moms of the Missing. In 1982, Louis got a job offer in New York after completing law school. So they moved there. But the move was also about Lou receiving help for his addiction. He went to rehab. It seemed to be the help he needed. He really kind of got his life together at that point. In 1984, a couple of years after the move, Susan and Louis had their first child, a baby boy they named Christopher. Lou has described becoming a parent as a pretty life-changing event for him. He almost always gets emotional when he talks about this. After Christopher was born, Lou saw a change in his mom, too. She'd had a tough life, but he saw her soften when she was with Christopher. By all accounts, Christopher was a typical happy baby, but his pediatrician diagnosed him as having fluid in his ears, so that prevented Christopher from being able to hear and process words clearly. So as he got a little bit older, his doctor prescribed him speech therapy sessions. Just a few years after Lou and Susan moved to New York, in 1985, they moved back to California. Susan was a California gal at heart, so when a transfer to California for Lou's job was approved, they went for it. But it was when they moved back to California that everything began to fall apart. By the fall of 1986, Lou had a different job from the one they moved for, and they moved to Mission Viejo, California, and they had a second child, Lisa. Lou had to commute to Los Angeles for work, and he was gone for up to 15 hours a day while Susan was alone with Christopher and Lisa. After Lisa was born, Susan developed postpartum depression. She still struggled with her family who refused to see her, and she felt lonely with Lou gone much of the time. So when Susan met a neighbor who was using drugs regularly, Susan had easy access to drugs, and she developed an addiction to cocaine and meth. I don't think Lou was completely unaware of Susan's drug use because they still used together from time to time, but he was certainly not aware of how bad it had gotten by 1987. In Moms of the Missing, Lou admitted that when an anniversary or holiday came around, he and Susan would have a vice weekend where they would go to a hotel while his mom, who often visited, watched the kids, and the weekend would involve an 8-ball of cocaine and sex parties. I'm a little confused on the timeline here just because it's referenced that his mom would watch the kids, so it had to be after Lisa was born. So it sounds like Lou was still occasionally using with Susan, but he wasn't aware that she was experiencing addiction. And it's hard to hear. It's disappointing. And you'd think parents would want to spend holidays with their children, but I appreciate Lou's honesty. He doesn't try to hide his past or sugarcoat it. He's not proud of it, but he is honest about it. Susan was beginning to spiral out of control at that time, using both cocaine and methamphetamine daily. From Lou's perspective, after the fact, Susan's problem grew far worse than his ever was.
Was she ever using when she was in charge of taking care of the kids?
Yes, unfortunately. And she kind of had to if she wanted to hide it from Lou, right? And Lou learned from friends of Susan that many of her days consisted of driving from one drug dealer to the next and leaving the kids in the car. She was not working at that time, so she had all the days to herself. Susan also displayed signs of paranoia. According to the Vanish podcast, she began using different names with friends, going by her middle name, her maiden name, just different combinations of her actual name, but Susan didn't officially change her name. She also allegedly began telling people she was going to kidnap her children, but people brushed it off as drug talk. Susan was in charge of paying the bills using Lou's money, and she stopped paying all the bills. Susan went into credit card debt and wrote fraudulent checks totaling about $6,000. According to the Vanish podcast, Lou later learned that Susan hadn't been taking Christopher to speech therapy as she was supposed to. He said she maybe took him to one or two sessions, but she pocketed the money that should have gone to speech therapy.
How was Lou unaware that the bills weren't getting paid?
So Susan was responsible for all of the finances, for paying all the bills, and she had their mailing address switched to a different address, I think a P.O. box. So all of the mail, all of the notices they were probably getting were going to that mailbox instead of their house. And he wasn't balancing the checkbook. You know, Susan would have been the one doing that. So he was just going to work, making the money and expecting that she was handling all of the bills. So he really did not know this was going on. Just a few days before the November 1987 abduction of Lisa and Christopher, everything came to a head. Lou's mom visited from New York for Thanksgiving, and people were knocking on their front door demanding to be paid. Lou's mom, of course, shared this with Lou, and he began piecing it all together and knew they were likely in serious debt. On November 19th, 1987, shortly after Lou's mom arrived, she and Lou confronted Susan. What Susan had been trying to hide was now out in the open, completely exposed. Lou and Susan got into a fight that night. She went upstairs in their home and refused to speak with him for the rest of the night. The next morning, on November 20th, according to a podcast from 2022, The Klein Files, with Lou and his private investigator, Susan was standing over him when he awoke and insisted that she needed to get Lou's paycheck in Los Angeles, but she didn't want to leave his mom alone in the home because she feared she would go through her belongings. So there's a little bit of that paranoia that she was experiencing. The argument reignited and it turned quite physical, with Susan hitting and attacking Lou. According to him, his mom, Lisa, Christopher, and a neighbor witnessed the incident, and he had visible injuries. And Susan was way smaller than Lou. He was about 275 pounds at that time, and she was about 90 pounds, which should have been a sign probably that something was wrong, because she was 5'7". And I'm 5'7". I haven't weighed 90 pounds since probably I was 12 or 13. So that probably should have been a sign that something was going on. But the point is, she was so much smaller than him, yet he couldn't stop her. Lou felt he couldn't go to work with the injuries, so he went to a hotel to cool off.
Did he bring the kids? I'd imagine he wouldn't feel comfortable leaving them there with Susan in the state that she's in right now.
So he did not bring the kids with him, which I'm sure he regrets now, but he left them there because his mom was still there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So he trusted that she could handle the situation. And he said about his mom that she had this really calming effect. So he thought his mom could likely calm Susan down and everything would be okay when he returned. Lou returned to the condo a few hours later with the hope that Susan had calmed down, but instead he found his mom on the ground. According to Lou and Moms of the Missing, Susan, and I quote, beat the shit out of her. Lou's mom said Susan said she was going to take Christopher to school and bring Lisa along. But his mom said, there's no need to bring Lisa. I can watch her. At which point, Susan pushed her down a flight of stairs in their complex and fled with Christopher and Lisa.
So that would mean that Susan has her own car. They're a two-car household.
Yes. So she left in her car. And when Lou has reflected on that day, he suspects that Susan might have done cocaine and meth that morning, which are both powerful stimulants. So yeah, it could have led to extreme aggression. And if she were under the influence of both, let alone one of those drugs, she certainly wouldn't have been in the right state of mind to be caring for two young children. Christopher was 3.5 at that time, and Lisa was 15 months old. Additionally, Susan had a heart condition that Lou feared she would not receive treatment for if she were on the run, and the meth and cocaine would not have helped any sort of heart condition Susan had. Lou noticed that Susan didn't take any toys, clothes, or even a bottle for Lisa. Susan went straight to her aunt's house, who lived in Riverside, California, about an hour's drive from Mission Viejo. When she was there, Susan filed a domestic violence report against Lou with the police, claiming she took the kids because of the abuse. And this claim that Lou was abusive would prove to be a big hurdle because Lou reported Lisa and Christopher's abduction by Susan, and they took very little action. They didn't take Lou seriously. They saw it as a matter they didn't need to interfere in, but he didn't stop fighting to get them to pay attention and care. While Lou was doing that, he was also trying to figure out where Susan, Christopher, and Lisa were. Lou presumed that Susan's family helped her get away. He believed she told her family that Lou, the man they already disliked, was abusive. With that information, they would certainly want to help Susan and the kids get away from him. But even if she didn't tell them that, it's not hard to imagine that Susan could have said she wanted to leave Lou and they would have jumped all over that. Susan left her aunt's house the day after the abduction and traveled to Oklahoma, where she went to her grandma's house. Shortly after Susan took off, the sheriff's office came to Lou and Susan's house to arrest Susan for check fraud. So they just missed her. So that was all in November. And then in December and January 1988, Susan's sister and brother-in-law were accused of letting her and the children stay at their home in Detroit, Michigan, although they have denied this. Lou's PI has said the FBI has proven this. And sometimes it's reported that she went to Pennsylvania, but I think what happened here is that her sister lived in Detroit and then she moved to Pennsylvania later. That's why I think there's some confusion here, and maybe Susan has been to both homes. And Susan's family has consistently denied aiding her. It took about 3 months, but by February 1988, the Orange County District Attorney's Office finally put out a felony arrest warrant for Susan for child concealment and check fraud. The investigation began too late, and law enforcement couldn't track Susan down. Lou was in complete distress during this period. He felt lost without his children, and he was concerned for their well-being and Susan's well-being. But he still believed that she was being helped by her family, so he wrote countless letters to Orange County prosecutors to charge Susan's family for allegedly aiding her, but the letters got him nowhere. The following year, 1989, he received some disturbing news from law enforcement. The year before, in 1988, a baby girl was found deceased. She had washed ashore on the San Francisco Bay, and tragically, it was clear the baby was killed. San Francisco is 400 plus miles away from Mission Viejo. Law enforcement thought they would identify the baby right away. Someone had to be missing their baby, but she remained unidentified. A sergeant with the investigating agency's wife was looking through the newspaper when she saw Lisa's picture with information about her abduction. This woman thought she had what was described as an uncanny likeness to the composite she saw of the unidentified girl, and the age was about right. She pointed this out to her husband, the sergeant, which prompted him to get in touch with Lou. And Lou agreed when he saw the composite that it looked like Lisa, which had to be a devastating feeling, although he didn't believe in his heart that it was Lisa. He thought there was a slim chance Susan could be in San Francisco because she had a grandmother who lived in the area. There was limited DNA testing at that time, especially with only one parent, Lou, to collect a sample from. But to cut to the chase here, it took 4 years for this baby to be identified. And once she was, it was established that the baby was not Lisa. Although Lou didn't really believe the girl was Lisa, he still had some doubts about that feeling. So he felt relieved when he learned that it wasn't Lisa. But the question remained of, where are his children?
How'd they figure out it wasn't Lisa? And what happened in those 4 years to, you know, to help in that investigation?
I presume there were some advancements, but they were comparing to different parents out there. And strangely, they don't say, when you're reading about this case, they don't say who the baby actually was. They just say they know it wasn't Lisa. So it sounded like they found the right set of parents to compare to. And it just took that amount of time to make that connection. During that 4 year period, Lou's divorce from Susan that he'd filed was granted, and he was awarded permanent custody of his children. If Susan and the children were found, there would be no custody battle. In 1993, 6 years after the abduction of Lisa and Christopher, Lou moved to Phoenix, Arizona, where he left his line of work as a paralegal and became a kindergarten teacher. Now, throughout all of the years since the abduction, Lou hired private investigators to try to track Susan down. He tried to keep their story in the media and the newspapers, attempting to cast a wide net because they could be anywhere. Not long after, Lewis began to file lawsuits against members of Susan's family, alleging that they assisted Susan after she abducted Lisa and Christopher. We've already discussed that Lou believed this, but he decided to take legal action. He wanted them to pay for what he believed they did, but more importantly, he hoped a lawsuit like this could elicit information about where Susan and the children might be. Lou had a tough battle that he described as uneven in Moms of the Missing. Susan's family reportedly had a team of successful lawyers, and Lou had one lawyer at a time. Lou sued Susan's aunt and grandma, claiming they assisted Susan after the abduction. A settlement was reached in that case, and Lou said the money went to lawyer and private investigator fees. In 1995, Lou sued Susan's sister and her husband with a similar claim as he made against her aunt and grandma. Susan's sister and husband denied these claims, but they quietly reached a settlement. At the same time, there was a lawsuit pending in Oklahoma with Susan's parents, but that was dismissed after Lou's mom, a key witness, was too physically ill to testify. She had cancer and died in 1997, the year after the lawsuit was dismissed. And it's quite sad to think about how Lou's mom, who seemed to come to life again when her grandchildren were born, never got to see them again before she died. And I know that's something Lou fears for himself at this point. In a lawsuit against Susan, Lou was awarded $13 million, but of course he had no way of collecting because Susan was nowhere to be found.
Have there been any sightings of Susan? Like, I'm sure her picture is being just blasted out everywhere, right? Maybe on a national level too?
There are billboards all over, or have been billboards all over the country at this point. And yes, there have been sightings. Lou has said there have been confirmed sightings in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Washington, and New Jersey, I believe. I have it written down. But so there have been sightings, and the private investigators are the ones tracking those down. yet they can never seem to get to Susan. They'll get a lead where they think she is, and they get close and she's not there, or it's someone else, or she's gone. You know, she knew they were on her trail, so she disappeared again. In 1998, 11 years after the abduction, Susan's dad spoke with the Ventura County Star for a short interview. And from what I could find, this was possibly the only interview he ever participated in about his daughter and grandchildren. He reported that he hadn't seen Susan, his daughter, since 1987. Quote, "We just had to write it off and forget about her. Not a day goes by I don't think about it," end quote. He went on to say that Lou had caused him and his family nothing but grief with the numerous lawsuits. And I completely understand this. If they didn't help their daughter, or even if maybe they brought her to Oklahoma and then she left quickly and they haven't seen her since, this would be frustrating and annoying. But logically, Susan likely would have sought help from her family after leaving Mission Viejo. She didn't have any money at that point, so she needed assistance. So I can see why they would be annoyed, but it doesn't appear Lou's lawsuits were unfounded. According to Lou, Susan would periodically talk with her family on the phone before the abduction. And this goes to your question earlier about if they were talking. So there was some communication going on, but in the days and weeks leading up to the abduction, there was a major uptick in their communication. He said they were talking 5-6 times a day. So what was going on there? But Susan's dad doesn't help his case. During that interview, he was asked if he was still looking for his daughter. And he said, quote, "If I find her, I wouldn't tell anybody anyway," end quote.
Yeah, with a statement like that, you can pretty much throw anything he just said right out the window.
I know. It makes it hard to believe anything he said. And then when he says, "We just had to forget her," but then he goes on to say, "Not a day goes by I don't think about it." It's like, what? So yeah, he's certainly not helping his case there. And Lou has said over time that Susan and her family have made up lies about him, saying that he was in the mafia. He put a hit on Susan, even saying he handcuffed Susan and locked her in their garage at one point before the abductions. According to Lou, the police looked into the allegations and found nothing to substantiate them. And I couldn't find any statements from police indicating any wrongdoing on Lou's part. Lou has expressed suspicions of Susan's family for apparently not hiring private investigators to look for Susan and the children if they didn't know where they were. They certainly seemed to have the money and resources to do that. And Lou's private investigators have shared that Susan's family is completely uncooperative. They will not speak with them really at all, which raises some eyebrows. I understand they don't like Lou, but wouldn't they want to cooperate if they didn't know where they are? I don't know. According to Moms of the Missing, in 2007, the assistant district attorney handling the case emailed Lou acknowledging that the case had been mishandled initially and stating that had they possessed the knowledge then that they had now in 2007, they would have approached it differently. Something I've wondered about is Susan's car. As far as I know, it was never recovered, but had they been on her trail sooner, on it right away, maybe they could have tracked down her car and therefore her and the kids. But it was too late. Nothing they say after the fact can undo the pain and anguish Lou has experienced since Susan left their house in 1987 with Lisa and Christopher. And Lou suffered tremendously. He experienced and still experiences a range of emotions: anger, frustration, fear, exhaustion, depression. I mean, the list goes on and on. Lou attempted to date other women over the years, but each time they told him they felt he was still in love with Susan. And I think there's something there. I don't know that Lou is still in love with Susan, but he was with her for 10 years and loved her deeply. He said that he wishes he had the chance to help her. In 2013, Lou's depression and mental health deteriorated to the point of hospitalization. He'd been hospitalized before for breakdowns, but this was the worst instance, and he remained on mental disability for about a year after his discharge. Although he got to the point where he could return to work, by the way, he got back into working as a law clerk. In his interview for Moms of the Missing, which came out in 2019, Lou further described his pain and shared that every day when he wakes up, he vomits. It's just a natural reaction to his reality. On top of Lou's depression, he deals with various physical ailments, some of which are likely tied to his mental health. In 2016, there was renewed hope, albeit through unexpected means. Susan's mom, Norma, died that year at the age of 83. If she knew where Susan, Lisa, and Christopher were when she died, she did not reveal that before her death. People noticed that in her obituary, Susan, Lisa, and Christopher are all on the list of who she's survived by. Does this imply that she knew they were still out there? I would say not necessarily, but it could be a sign. Lou's private investigators had eyes on the funeral home in Oklahoma the day before the funeral was held, and they didn't see Susan. So when they saw the funeral director leave that night, they left as well. They monitored the visitation, and Susan and the kids did not show. However, according to the funeral director, a mystery woman called him after hours the night before. So that night when the private investigators saw him leave, well, after around midnight, this mystery woman called him, begging him to let her see Norma. So he went back to the funeral home and let this woman in. And the description he gave could align with Susan. And frankly, who else would be trying to privately see Susan's mom at that hour? The private investigators fully believe this was Susan.
Yeah, I'm assuming they were looking for Susan as well as the kids, potentially.
Yes.
If they were still alive, they would be in their, 30s at this point? I mean, they probably wouldn't even be recognizable.
Yeah, you're right. So Susan would have been 57 at that time. Lisa would have been 30 and Christopher 32. And they have put together age progress photos of them, but those aren't always that accurate.
Yeah. Seems like a flawed science.
Well, it seems like you could nail it down by taking real, I would like to see what a baby picture of me, or maybe for Christopher, it might be a little more accurate because he was 3.5, not right. 15 months old, but a picture of me when I was 3.5, I wonder what it would look like at my age now, what it would generate and how accurate it would be. It'd be interesting. And the phone number the woman used to call the funeral director was a burner phone. So another dead end, but also an indicator that this was likely Susan. So yes, the private investigators were looking for Christopher and Lisa as well, but they never saw anyone who could have been them. But to your point, would they have necessarily known? I don't know. And something else Lou has pointed out is the kids were blonde when they were young, but Lou said he was blonde until he was about 10 years old. So all the age progress photos seem to give them blonde hair when it's they may not even have blonde hair. So that's another issue. But after this, there was increased attention on the case. And with that, new information reportedly came to investigators that shows at least one member of Susan's family knows exactly what Lisa and Christopher look like as adults. Because as we've just been talking about, they asserted the age progress composites created by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children don't accurately reflect their appearances. This family member also told the private investigators that Lisa and Christopher were split up at some point when they were young and not raised together. And I have so many questions about that. Did Susan raise one of them? Did someone else in the Gamble family raise the other one? Were they raised by some other family separately, two different families? There are a lot of possibilities. In the Vanish podcast, Lou's private investigator indicated they think Susan is staying near the Texas-Oklahoma border with ties to California, meaning she is going out to California sometimes. But that was in 2017. So I don't know where they suspect she is now or if they have any suspicions on where Lisa and Christopher are. And this just makes my head spin because there are so many different possibilities here. The best case scenario is that they're all still alive. If we go down that path, I have a lot of questions about the way the kids were raised after Susan abducted them. Did Susan receive treatment for her addiction? And what were the kids told about their dad? Lou believes she either told him he was dead as they got older, or she made him out to be a monster so they'd want nothing to do with him. But kids don't remain kids forever, and they tend to start asking more questions as they get older. But I suppose Susan could be adept at deceiving, or maybe if they were raised separately, they're not around their mom to ask her those questions. But what makes this also difficult is that Lisa and Christopher were too young to have memories from that time. Although Christopher was 3.5, so that is the age where kids can start to form memories. And this is an interesting concept in itself, and it can differ by person. When would you say you started forming memories?
Probably around 4 to 5.
Yeah, I would say the same.
Yeah, I think my earliest memories were when we lived in San Jose, and I think it was around 4 to 5 at that point.
Yeah, I think that's pretty typical. So for me, yeah, I would say probably 5, maybe a few from 4, getting close to 5, but absolutely nothing from 3.5, like nothing at all. And another question I have here is, did Susan and the kids spend holidays with her family or visit them? Now, they deny this, but if they did or still do, it must have been so odd for the family to have to pretend they don't know what happened and to potentially still pretend.
Yeah, you would think at some point, if they're getting together for these family gatherings and they're still involved in the kids' lives, that you would think that someone would tell them at some point, right?
Yeah, you would think, but apparently not. I don't think that's happened.
If they asked, who was my dad?
Well, maybe they have, and everyone, maybe the whole narrative is that their dad is a horrible person. They should want nothing to do with him.
Yeah, which would be an easy explanation for them because they didn't like him to begin with.
For the family, yeah.
Right.
This were my family member and this were going on and I knew the whole story. I don't think I could keep that to myself. I don't see how I could unless I truly, I guess, believed that their father was some horrible person. But there's enough information out there now about Lou to not believe that.
Yeah, and there's no way that they're blind to all the information that's on Lou out there.
Yeah, so maybe there are other benefits to not come forward for this family. But I don't know. We can still hope that if that's the case, one day one of those family members would feel guilty and come forward with direct and specific information about where they are, and it's just yet to happen. Now, some people have questioned how, if Lisa and Christopher are still alive, they don't know who they are, since they could easily find this information online, but I don't think it's that strange. They'd have to know what to search for. They may have no idea that their names were once Lisa and Christopher Zaharias, and they'd have to have the suspicions in the first place. Lou has tried to spread the word about his children as much as possible, but I wouldn't consider this a well-known case. Follow a lot of true crime, and I'd never heard of this until our listener reached out about it. Not that I know every case that exists out there, but it's certainly not super well known. Additionally, like we talked about, maybe the age progressed images of them aren't that accurate, making it harder for someone to recognize them because they had to go to school unless they were homeschooled. they're adults now, presumably with jobs. They likely have neighbors, spouses, possibly even kids of their own. So there are, in theory, plenty of people who could identify them. There is a more grim possibility that Susan and/or the kids are deceased, and that's why they've never been found. But Lou's private investigators don't believe this. They've said they would know if Susan died. It could also be that Susan is alive and Lisa and Christopher are not. Sadly, there were major concerns about Susan's capability of caring for her children when she absconded with them. So the likelihood of something happening to them is not zero. This certainly would explain why they haven't been identified yet, but wouldn't someone have noticed if Susan's two kids just disappeared? Maybe Susan's family was telling the truth and they haven't had contact with her or the kids since 1987. Could Susan really have done it on her own? Maybe. But one thing that stuck out to me is that the private investigators said that Susan's sister, who has children, but they're now grown, they're adults, have not really spoken with them. But when they have, they've said things like there is such a thing as the perfect crime. The private investigators say they're completely taunting them with statements like that. And that makes me think they're still alive. And it kind of just seems like everyone knows it in that family, but could be wrong there. A list of questions has been compiled for anyone who thinks they could be Lisa or Christopher, and I want to share some of them. You can find the complete list and the link in the notes for this episode. Victim News Online reported these questions. Do you question if the stories you were told about your father were true or if they were created to cover up a lie? Did you ever ask about your father and were told he was dead? A bad man, perhaps. Maybe you were told he was abusive. Has your identity ever been questioned? Has anyone from a government agency ever questioned the validity of your birth certificate, social security card, or any other official document related to your identity? Did you move around a lot as a child? Was a sudden move sparked by a visit from someone in your maternal family? Are you adopted but have no papers to prove it? Do you have a copy of your original birth certificate bearing your biological father's name, or has your birth certificate been amended? Have you ever seen it? Do you have a social security card? Were you issued a new social security number or name around November 1987 or January 1988? Do you have photos of yourself from earlier years, or are they all missing? And I think that's an interesting question because Christopher and Lisa have probably never seen a photo of themselves from before the ages of 3.5 and 15 months, respectively. And on the social security aspect, Lisa and Christopher's social security numbers have never been used. So Susan somehow managed to obtain different social security numbers for them when they were young, which likely would have been easier in the 1980s. They seem to focus a lot on the age progress photos in this case, but I think, especially with Christopher, it's a good idea to get those pictures out of him when he was 3.5. And those are circulated as well, of course. But let's say Susan or whoever took custody of Christopher started taking pictures of him after that point. Well, let's say they started when he was 4. You don't change that much between 3.5 and 4. Of course, there are changes, but if Christopher sees a photo of himself when he was 3.5 and he's seen photos of himself after that point when he was really young, then he should recognize himself. So I think possibly even Lisa too. So I think getting those photos out is really important as well. And same with Susan, right? I mean, we only have pictures of her from when she was 28, when she abducted the children. But if they circulate those, Christopher and Lisa would likely still recognize their mom unless she didn't raise them. Then maybe they wouldn't.
I'm really curious what story the kids were told, why they didn't have a dad in the picture. You know, I guess it makes it a little easier for Susan and potentially Susan's family to create a story since they were at such a young age where they hadn't likely hadn't developed any memories yet. So they could really make up anything they wanted. And the kids most likely wouldn't have even questioned it.
Yeah. And something I just thought of that is another possibility is, I suppose if Susan met a man shortly after she abducted the children and they started a relationship, she could have even said, "That's your dad." Like, that's how young they were, that they wouldn't even know. But at times, Lou has said he hopes kind of that they did have a father figure in their lives and a good man, you know, because it's been really hard for him knowing that he didn't get to raise his kids. Now, some of you might be listening to this and thinking we only have Lou's story and it's very one-sided, but Susan is nowhere to be found. And if more was going on behind closed doors that we don't realize and that can't be dismissed entirely, then Susan is the only one who can tell that story and paint that picture. She's the only one. And I don't want to dismiss this possibility that maybe there was more going on with Lou and Susan than we realize. But I will say, when Lou speaks about Susan, he talks about the love he still has for her. And he doesn't call her a monster or say she's a horrible person. Of course, he's upset and angry about what happened, how everything transpired. And he talks about the horrible things she did. But I just think it's important to acknowledge the way he speaks about Susan. Lou continues to fight for answers. The not knowing pains him. He would rather know if they are no longer alive than to continue to wonder. He has been through a lot mentally and physically, but also financially. He has spent more than $1 million on lawyers and private investigators over the years. So he's said he'll be working until he dies. He has no retirement savings, no investments, nothing. So I hope this case continues to reach a broader audience, and anyone who questions if they could be Lisa or Christopher will come forward for Lou's sake. He's not in the best of health, so the sooner the better. Lou could be a grandfather, for all we know. If someone believes they have come in contact with Susan, Lisa, or Christopher, you are asked to call the police. Do not approach them directly. There is a tip line you can call if you have information. It's 409-729-8798 with the extension 3, or call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 800-843-5678. Please check out the most recent Age Progress images of Lisa, Christopher, and Susan, as well as the pictures of them from when they were younger on our Instagram at Key of the Case Podcast. We know the Age Progress photos may not be the most accurate, but it's still at least worth checking out because they could be anywhere. You know, Lou is on all of the genealogy sites, so maybe one day Lisa or Christopher will get curious and submit a DNA sample to one of those sites, and that could be the key to this case, but no one is banking on that. So his private investigators are still searching. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. That is all for now, but we will be back next week with a new case, and we hope you all have a wonderful week. Bye.
Bye.